Part 3. Death of a Dream. Chapter 15. Avenues of the Mechanicum. The True Webway. Eternal War. The procession travelled through tunnels of dark metal and glowing circuitry. Arkan Land was no stranger to the gloom of underground complexes, given his chosen profession, yet he found it curiously oppressive. It wasn't the darkness, for the walls themselves radiated a weak electrical light from their circuit lines, nor was it the fog, which seemed to have no source, for once he had determined it carried no toxic potential, the stuff was easy to ignore. No, what he found oppressive was the knowledge of what waited beyond these ironclad walls. He had faith, of course. He had all the faith a man could possess that the Omnissiah's psychic resolve would keep these passages protected. But still, Land had never considered himself given to fits of imaginative excess. When venturing into the ancient catacombs of data dungeons, his concerns were largely centred on dealing with the inevitable slew of automated defences, not worrying what mythological monsters might lurk within the shadows outside his torch beams. Now he found himself endlessly staring at the circuit-etched walls, wincing at every shudder of a passing tank or rattling generator, thinking of the warp. The warp itself. Crashing in shrieking, monstrous majesty against the outside of the tunnels through which he travelled. He couldn't hear it, he couldn't see it, but he knew it was there. A siege, invisible to the senses.
Like travelling beneath an ocean, he mused without a smile, constantly fearful of the transit tube springing a leak.
A mind full of these nebulous terrors made for a joyless walk. It wasn't as if he could confide his fears to the rest of the convoy, either. The Sisters of Silence already knew and seemed wholly unfazed. The Archimandrite was impossible to engage in any conversation beyond the status of the convoy, and the battle servitors lacked any conversational aptitude whatsoever. Baroness Jaya and her courtiers were still in the dark regarding the truth of the webway and the warp beyond. Now there was an amusing thought.
How their limited intellects must be straining to process all of this.
Zephon knew the truth, of course, but placid, angelic Zephon had spent most of the journey alone, when he wasn't at Diocletian's side. Ah, well. Occasionally, the sections of the circuitry ingrained upon the walls would shatter and emit sparks. Land flinched each and every time, picking up his pace. Determining any temporal data here had proved impossible. The procession's various chronometers tallied seconds, minutes, and hours in both directions with no consistency. One servitor's systems insisted the date was 300 years before the declaration of the Great Crusade. Arkan Land's own chron had functioned well enough for almost 4 hours, at which point it had started counting between 7 and 50 seconds for each one that passed. On several occasions, it had stopped for an unknown span, only to come back to life of its own accord. He'd ceased trying to glean any sense from it. He walked knee-deep in the clinging fog, which was either pale gold or smoky azure, depending upon the viewer in question. Despite bringing his raider, he was content to let it guide itself as part of the procession, relying on its onboard servitors and machine spirit core. The webway was something he simply had to experience outside of his battle tank's protective plating. Sapien rode upon his shoulder, the irises of its eyes endlessly click, click, clicking, as it recorded picts that appealed to its primitive brain. Frequently, Land paused to make Auspex scans and take readings. Sapien would leap from his shoulder during each stop, plunging through the mist, doing the Emperor alone knew what. Land regularly pried the beast's cranium open to review the cyber monkey's pict feed, but the images were of nothing but circuit-inlaid walls and floors, or the featureless spread of colour-bleaching mist. Archon was entitled to travel at the head of the procession, alongside the Archimandrite and the unwelcoming presences of Kyria and Diocletian. More often he chose to travel alone, moving here and there throughout the convoy, sometimes even falling back far enough to walk alongside the rattling strides of Baroness Jaya and her marching knights. They were an inspiring lot, in their own way. A vigilator clade of protectors brought up the column's rear, their claws thrumming with waspish sonic lethality, curved talons clicking out of rhythm with their augmented tread. He knew better than to seek to engage them in conversation. On sacred Mars, they were known as the Sicarii, a dune-stalking, inhuman transmogrification of lesser Skitarii warriors, and few of them possessed enough personality to be considered companionable. At no point did they make camp. The servitors required no rest, and the convoy never ceased. Land himself was used to the discomfort of months-long expeditions into subterranean vaults, so stealing a few hours of sleep in the back of a Triaros conveyor or his own raider tank was luxury enough. Sleep didn't come easily, but it offered the only opportunities to forget what waited behind the curved walls. The Mechanicum's sections of the webway were much as he expected them to be, albeit with the added occlusion of the strange and sourceless mist. Tunnel after tunnel of sanctified metal, the walls lacerated by gleaming lines of precious circuitry. The wiring was complicated enough to be almost hieroglyphic in nature, covering every surface of the tunnel's insides. Unerringly, the procession marched forwards, never pausing, even when the passages forked or branched, never journeying along a route that would be too confined for House Viridian's towering silhouettes. There were several of those.
"Where do these passages lead?"
he'd voxed to Diocletian from his raider's command console.
"Nowhere,"
was the inevitable reply.
"The tunnels are unfinished, then, or never rebuilt, or construction was never started after the very first foundations."
Curious. Even so, there was a definite scale to the operation. Arcan knew from the Archimandrite's map that the Mechanicum engineered sections were nothing more than tentative tendrils binding Terra to the true web. It justified the modesty of their efforts, including why he could perceive the ceilings of most tunnels through a haze of mist. Yet was it not said that the Legio Ignatum had committed Titans to the great work? How could they have walked their god machines along these routes? The answer came to him as soon as the question occurred. The great workers must have brought any larger Titans piecemeal, then disassembled components shipped along these paths upon grav convoy slabs to be reassembled deeper in the webway. What delicious sacrilege! And what would be the fate of any machine spirit given life in this strange realm? Would it display ticks and deficiencies unseen outside the webway? Would Titans constructed within the webway fall victim to the realm's unnatural juncture in reality? So many questions, so few answers. Kane, dear, respected Zagreus Kane, hadn't opposed Lan's decision to devote himself to the great work. The Fabricator General's accommodating position on the matter had come as a surprise, to say the least. He'd anticipated refusals based on notions of expertise and primacy. He was, after all, a techno-archaeologist, wholly unsuited to war, no matter how respected he might be in his vocation. Land had his suspicions on just why Kane had agreed, however. Oh, yes, he had his suspicions. Sapien bared his little teeth and emitted a series of chittering clicks. Land turned, looking back over his shoulder as a tall shape emerged from the mist, becoming the Blood Angel Zephon. The twin turbines rising from his back like brutal machine wings swayed with the warrior's gait. Battle servitors trundled past, blind to anything beyond the Archimandrite's guiding signal at the front of the column.
"Greetings," said the pale Blood Angel.
His portcullis-faced Mark III helm was under his arm, leaving his face bare.
"My Barlight compatriot,"
Land replied. He scratched his scalp, where hair had long since lost the war to maintain a colony on the barren landscape. Zephon slowed his pace to walk alongside Land.
"You must be proud," he said.
to see what the efforts of Mars have wrought.
Proud, thought Land.
Yes, I suppose, in a way, though the true wonder, the true law, waits beyond.
I am indeed,
he said aloud.
And it was good that your High Priestess survived her surgery.
Hieronyma. She isn't my High Priestess. She falls within the circle of a far different aspect of the Martian Covens. She worships the Omnissiah as destruction itself, as the Unmaker God.
And you?
I revere him for what he is, a genius. I don't hold any one aspect of his genius sacred above any other.
I see. Zephon raised an eyebrow.
Though I note that you corrected my terminology rather than express relief at the priestess's survival.
Insightful fellow. The Archimandrite venture is a glory, good sir. But it isn't a fate I would ever crave. Trapped inside that hull forevermore. Nerve stripped and muscle riven and bone scraped, bound into amniotic soup to sustain a brain and spinal cord.
Lan shuddered theatrically.
No, thank you.
I see, the Blood Angel said again.
I doubt that, Lan thought. You didn't witness the surgery.
Zephon turned gentle eyes upon Sapien. The cyber monkey took it as an invitation. It leapt onto the warrior's pauldron, clinging to the white wing symbol of the Ninth Legion, before scampering up between the jump pack's turbines.
I trust this creature will not urinate on me, the Space Marine asked. I'm not certain my dignity could survive such a blow.
Land looked up at the Blood Angel, one eye narrowed. He stroked his pointed beard in thought.
Sapien takes nutrients intravenously. What little waste he excretes is via gel sac deposits. Therefore, the answer to your question is no.
Zephon chuckled softly.
Charming. Here. He reached a bionic hand back over one shoulder. The cyber monkey allowed itself to be lifted by the scruff and handed back to its master. It looked at the immense warrior as it settled upon Land's shoulder once more and clicked an inquisitive little chirping sound.
I note the instabilities of your bionics, said the techno-archaeologist. Flicker twitches at the metacarphalangeal knuckles. The work of a poor surgeon?
Zephon's smile was gone. Graft rejection.
Indeed. I didn't think that could happen with your kind.
No, you know otherwise, the Blood Angel replied mildly.
I'd like to study your bionics at some point to glean an understanding of their exact deficiencies.
Perhaps, if circumstances allow. The silence was approaching awkwardness when Lan spoke once more.
Is there something you need of me, Blood Angel?
No. I merely wish to ask your thoughts regarding the Imperial Dungeon. The Viridian Knights witnessed it through gun feeds in their cockpit's monitors. The servitors were obviously indifferent. You and I were among the only ones to witness it with our naked eyes.
And you wondered if... what? I found it some profound and moving experience?
The Blood Angel hesitated. I wondered exactly that. Though the venom in your tone leads me to believe you did not.
It was interesting enough,
Land replied archly. What was he going to do? Admit to some superhuman brute that he had wept with the revelations of that journey? The galaxy burned because of these ceramite-clad fools.
But we of the Red World are used to wonders beyond the ken of mortal minds.
I see. Then may I ask why you accompanied the expedition? Land raised an eyebrow.
To bear witness? I assure you nothing could keep me away.
Aren't you honoured to be here, warrior?
Zephon nodded.
Of course. Prefect Koros chose me specifically, though I confess I do not know why.
Land looked up at the Blood Angel's statuesque features, seeking any expression or suggestion as to the warrior's thoughts. Seeing no sign of understanding, Arkan Land smiled a strange smile, one with no warmth that yet lacked any shred of mockery.
He really doesn't know,
Land thought.
And yet it's so obvious.
Something amuses you? Asked Zephon.
Oh, no. Never that.
Land chuckled, giving lie to the words. Reaching the end of his patience, Zephon inclined his head in respect.
If you will excuse me, Explorator Land.
Of course, of course.
The Blood Angel walked on, his long stride easily outpacing Land's.
Touchy fellow,
he thought, watching the Blood Angel's back. An unknowable time after his encounter with Zephon, a message crackled across the vox, making its way down the processional line. The order was given to brace, to be ready, to detune any aura scry sensors and Auspex scanners, and diminish any transhuman senses.
Ahead is one of the Webway's original sections.
It was Diocletian's voice, as distracted and terse as the custodian always seemed to sound.
Adhere to the path at all costs.
Land's mouth was dry. Licking his lips made no difference. His tongue was leather.
At last. At last.
He walked on, staring ahead through the wide manufactured tunnel, feeling the thrill of excitement that always bubbled up before the possibility of revelation. At his sides, the battle servitors rumbled on. They, however, were lobotomized far past wonder. When the iron walls faded away, they took their circuit-laden gleam and the hum of trembling engines with them. Mist rose in place of defined structure. Baroness Jaya had no idea where the path was, or how those at the procession's vanguard were still following it. The procession's footsteps no longer echoed from walls of Martian metal. Instead, the golden mist ate all sound and sent it back to them in fragments. Was this the Webway? The true Webway? Yes, it was, she soon realized. And no, it was not. Passage walls became evident where the mist thinned, architecture of some arching substance that defeated any Auspex rakes. The Invalid Returns read as something akin to Eldar Wraithbone, similar in physical density, and according to Land's prattling,
similar in psychic resonance. Oh, forgive me, you couldn't possibly understand.
Yet comprised of no known material. She'd known from studying the limited available data that the great work, this so-called web, was the creation of a race far older than any living in the galaxy. That fact held little awe for a woman who had taken her first Xenos life at the age of 14. Species dawned and died with brutal regularity. The Crusade had driven hundreds of such species to extinction, and there had been alien empires at war before humanity itself was a brief, portentous meeting of proteins. No, it didn't matter how old this industrious species had been. What made her skin crawl was the far more visceral reality that her scanners forced her to face. Ilara Latharak, third sword exemplar, had voxed the very same sentiment from farther back in the processional line. Jaya heard her courtier swallow softly.
Pray to speak, Baroness.
Ever and always.
My gratitude. Whatever this material is, it came from outside our galaxy. How can that be? How can that be possible?
Jaya shuddered at the thought. Her knight's joints groaned in sympathy through their kin bond. The tunnels diverged without warning, or any impression of which route was worthy over any other. The mist would simply part to reveal two or more alternate passages, each as indistinct as all others. Jaya sent Auspex relays down every passage, even long past the point she realized no route would register anything of interest upon her scanners. She switched through Focus Refine, through mono-drenching, even through the relative crudeness of color-scrying, only the latter revealing anything at all. Her instruments measured no life, yet a great deal of movement.
I have motion,
she had voxed the first time.
I have nothing,
Devrim replied at once. The rest of the column reported their own findings, which varied between the silence of Devrim's scans and the mess of Jaya's. The movement ghosted around with each scan, seemingly belonging to no living beings, following no physical possibility. Either an army of spirits danced down many of the tunnels, or the passages themselves were moving in some unearthly, instrument-defeating manner. Sometimes she heard her name spoken aloud. It wasn't a voice she recognized, nor did the Vox acknowledge transmission receipt, despite the telltale crackle of interference that bordered the man's speech. More than once she heard his murmuring directly into her left ear, in a whispering tone that was too faint to make out his meaning. She couldn't be sure if his parched whispers were too soft to understand, or spoken in a language she simply didn't know.
"Pray to speak, Baroness."
Devrim's voice made her flinch.
"Ever and always," she replied.
The formal words seemed stuck in her dry mouth.
"My gratitude. My Vox receiver is malfunctioning, or... I'm not certain. Is anyone's Vox registering indecipherable whispering?"
Nervous chuckles from throughout the column answered the question well enough. Faces leered at Jaya from the mist. Human. Alien. Other. She watched them on her gun feeds and through the God's Eye strip feed of her night's primary vision realizer. One of the faces wrenched in the mist, turning and melting with the hazy impressions of reaching arms. The mist rippled with the suggestion of flame. That was how her father had died, seared alive in his control seat, too weakened by his wounds to operate the ejection braces. It took Sacristan Torolek 3 sleepless days to reverently scrape and respectfully flush all organic particulates from the knight's cockpit. In the end, House Viridian's courtiers had buried a charred husk still baked into its throne. Other shadows danced, capered, thrashed in the murk. Jaya did her best to pay them no heed. She kept her grip white-knuckled on the controls. Her hands couldn't shake that way.
"Jaya,"
a voice whispered her name with shy care. A youthful voice, one that made her squeeze her eyes closed as if such a gesture could ward her against any haunting. Perhaps it worked, for the voice didn't return. Grunting in dismissal, she did her best not to think of the voice's owner. There had been a boy once, a boy from another of Hyrox's monarch-blooded families, the first boy she'd ever spent time with, unchaperoned. A lifetime ago now. She heard several of the others draw in their breath as the column entered the first void. Mist and mist and mist met their eyes and scanners alike. Objectively, she knew what this must be. Objectively, she knew this must be one of the immense regions capable of allowing transit for entities. Eldar Wraithbone vessels, the size of Imperial warships. Their own pathway had finally threaded through one of the vast thoroughfares that made up the webway where alien monsters swam through space without need of the warp. She had seen the tale told by the walls of the Imperial dungeon. She knew what this was. This was the Emperor's hope for the species. These passages were supposed to be safe.
"Why then am I trembling?"
Jaya had ceased forward locomotion and Twist unlocked the seals of her cockpit. She wanted to stand up in her throne and look out upon the nothingness with naked eyes. The first thing she sensed was the faint smell of ice, as if this passageway led to some clean, frozen world with aspects of precious normality, like a sun and a moon and sane dimensions that complied with physics. The second thing she sensed was the enormity of the absolute nothingness above her, around her, beneath her. Pure void existed, with her at its heart. Jaya felt, as she always did when looking at images of the deep ocean, the endless murk in every direction, forming an entire reality where creatures of impossible size writhed in the salty, silty dark. She resealed her hatch and enthroned herself once more. The knight strode on. Jaya heard music drifting down several of the misty tunnels, as teasingly familiar and ultimately unrecognizable as the murmurs had been. Half-remembered melodies played on instruments she couldn't imagine. This, it seemed, was the harmonic accompaniment to the shadows that beckoned to her. More than once she panned her hull-mounted stubber at the capering, thrashing silhouettes, her gloved finger curled against the trigger, stroking with slow need. Later passages. Farther into the webway, she wondered. Deeper,
offered indistinct geometries that no picked resolution could refine. Walls veered away at angles that caused the human observers to blink their watering eyes and turn away from the threat of headaches. Buildings stood in the misty shadows, towers and arches and domes wrought by alien thaumaturgy, either lost to time or far along the path to the oblivion of the forgotten. They seemed out of phase and somehow untouchable, as if imperfectly recalled by a wounded mind. The path rose. Some tunnels sloped sharply enough to almost be considered a fall. Slants and askew angles became commonplace. Even gravity began to follow its own erratic choices. Noting an incline of yore beneath her knight's iron tread, Drea cast an Auspex probe ahead through the convoy, realizing that fully half of the procession was travelling along what she'd believed was the tunnel's westward side, treating it as though it were the floor. Wonder and adrenaline made for poor sustenance over a protracted period of time. Drea was tired, having scarcely slept in days. Her leaden limbs were beginning to click and crackle with cramping sinew. Still, she refused to vox Diocletian and ask for an estimation for when they would reach their destination. Viridian would show no weakness throughout its penitence. Again the passages divided. Again they branched. Again they rejoined other arteries, meshing into one. She had advanced to the column's front when the vox exploded in a storm of static, the white noise shrouding dozens of male voices all speaking over each other in deathly calm. A ripple spread through the convoy, section by section. Servitor motors whined. Tanks rattled and growled. Drea slammed both boots into their control holsters, switching to active manipulation. Is that the main army? Are these the voices of the 10,000? She couldn't see anything beyond the ghostly buildings in every direction, at odd slopes as the passageway rose. Are we here at last? Diocletian, she voxed. Prefect Corus, are we close?
We are in the vox range of Callister,
he replied, distracted. She could almost feel him straining to filter through the conflicting voices. The Archimandrite entered the channel with a tuning screech of her internal comm system. Her monotone voice followed.
I have established cognitive grips within Callistar. The city is heavily besieged. Every war servitor currently engaged reports overwhelming force arrayed against the defenders.
Diocletian whispered a curse, some cultural slang from his childhood that made no sense to her. Nevertheless, it was the first time Jair had ever heard him swear.
The walls are already down. The enemy is inside the city,